October is here, leaves are turning, weather's turning colder, and minds are turning toward elections. This is our final series of episodes ranking the races for the 2022 midterms. Are we looking at a red trickle, a red wave, or red tsunami? We'll begin with the Senate. I'm Dr. Nolte, and this is Blind Politics. And welcome, podcast listeners, to another episode of Blind Politics with Dr. Nolte. I am Dr. A.J. Nolte, Assistant Professor of Government at Regent University's Robertson School of Government. Once again, views expressed in this podcast don't represent those of either Regent University or the Robertson School. Please remember you can rate and subscribe to us on your favorite podcast provider. You can also find us and see my face if you want to do that on American One. That's American and the number one, your one-stop shop for America's best conservative news and commentary. A very exciting announcement with respect to American One coming in just a minute. I want to apologize for the hiatus. On my end, I had a 10-year dossier that I had to complete that has now been submitted. And basically that means everything that I've done academically for the past 7 years, for those who aren't familiar with that process. Thoughts and prayers definitely appreciated on that one. But we're also working on some studio stuff. So, but the exciting announcement is this. On election night, if you are looking for election coverage and you are trying to think, man, where can I go to get the best race-by-race coverage of what's coming down, what it means, American One is your place, because I will be on the election team along with my partner in crime, Scott McJunkin. You may have seen some of the backstage videos that he and I have been doing, and we're going to be doing election night together. So if you are looking for the best election night coverage in the business, you are going to find that right here on American One. Please check out that live stream for us on election night. I'm very excited to be doing that. So last time we checked in, it was September. It was early September, and people were still kind of in the August, doldrums of August, right? And people were saying, maybe it's just a red trickle. And you remember me saying, do not believe what people are selling you. August is a false friend to the majority party. It has been in every election cycle I have tracked. Lo and behold, we are now in October, and people are singing a very different tune, and we are seeing a very different tune in the polls. This is because likely voter screens have been implemented. People are paying attention. Gas prices are going up. Inflation looks like it is here to stay. And everybody is remembering that whatever their thoughts and feelings might be about the issues of the summer, right now it's all about the economy. Most recent, one of the most recent polls I saw, New York Times, Siena, a full 44% of people say that inflation, the economy, etc., is their number one issue. Abortion, which was supposed to be the thing that was going to save Democrats, 5%, right? And you will recall that these are things that I told you were likely to happen on previous episodes of this podcast. So it is always important to take the victory lap when you can. And I say that mostly to preface the Senate rankings so that if I get a bunch of them wrong, you can remember that I got some other stuff right along the way. So where do we sit now with Senate races? I have made an executive decision that in October, I'm getting rid of the toss-up category. Midterms are about 3 weeks away as we're recording this. And when you're this close, I feel like it's time to be bold, right? Toss-ups in October, that's for cowards. No offense to all the prognosticators who still use toss-ups, but we're not going to do that here. We are going to call the ball on every single Senate race on the map. And so let's begin. As always, we're starting with likely Democrat and moving all the way to likely Republican. So in the likely D category, we have a new race that pops onto the radar, and that is Connecticut. I do expect Dick Blumenthal to win this race and win re-election against his opponent, Laura Levy. However, there have been a couple of polls that showed this one within 10 points. That, to me, warrants moving the race into the likely category. That means that it is more likely than not to stay with the incumbent party, but there is a slight possibility of an upset. If we are looking at a true red tsunami, this one could be unexpectedly close, and it could be one of those sleepers that no one is paying attention to. Levy's turned out to be a stronger candidate, I think, than expected. And Blumenthal is possibly somebody who could be caught napping. But Connecticut is a little bit of fool's gold and has been for Republicans in Senate races in the past. Everybody with a long enough memory will remember Linda McMahon in 2010 and how that one never really got close. So this one is just on the board as likely Democrat. Next on our list would be Washington. Tiffany Smiley has been pretty close, but Patty Murray has maintained a durable, albeit smaller than expected, lead in the polling. This is sufficient. Also, with the inelastic sort of blue nature of Washington, it's very hard for Republicans to win, even in a very good environment in Washington. Again, we can look back to 2010, the Patty Murray, Dino Rossi race. And you know, Murray still managed to pull that one out. It was very, very close. Tiffany Smiley is running a good campaign, so there's a slight possibility of an upset. But Washington stays in the likely Democratic category for now. Now we are in a race that is on the cusp of likely and leans. And I'm going to nudge it just over the edge into leans Republican because or leans Democrat because of the strength of the Republican campaign here. And that's Colorado. Joe O'Dea has run a very good campaign. He's run the kind of campaign that you need to run in a, let's be realistic about Colorado, light blue state that got bluer during the Trump administration. Okay. So Joe O'Dea is probably not my exact type of Republican. He's not as pro-life as I would prefer. I would still vote for him in Colorado because he's certainly more pro-life than Michael Bennett. He is certainly more conservative than Michael Bennett. And O'Dea has a realistic chance of winning. This is on the border between leans and likely because, again, Bennett has had a small but durable lead in the polling. But Bennett has been something of an underperformer. He didn't do super well against a less well-funded, less strong campaign run by his opponent in 2016. And so this one could break late. And so we'll keep this one just on the edge of the lean category. Next in leans Democrat, we have New Hampshire. This is incumbent Senator Maggie Hassan now has a nominee against her on the Republican side. That's retired General Don Bolduc, who ran also in 2020. Bolduc is an interesting character. He has a very decorated military career. He ran in the primary as pretty strongly MAGA, but very quickly pivoted to the center. I would even say he ran to and bear hugged the center, if by the center of New Hampshire politics we mean Governor Chris Sununu, because there actually is a hilarious video of him literally giving Sununu the bear hug the day after the primary. New Hampshire is the swingiest of swing states. Hassan is not an overwhelmingly popular incumbent, and she barely skated past Kelly Ayotte in 2016. Bolduc is not the strongest nominee that Republicans could have had. That would have been Chris Sununu, who decided to run for governor again instead. But there is still a realistic possibility that Bolduc ends up with a shot at this one. So we're putting that in just the leans Democrat category for now. Next on the list is Arizona. And this one could, if we still were doing toss-ups, Arizona would be on the toss-up edge of the you know, sort of lean D here. But we're not doing toss-ups. And we're not doing toss-ups because it's October, right? And so I have to call the ball on this. And if you're asking me to call the race today, who do I think is going to win? I think Mark Kelly's got a better chance than Blake Masters. Kelly's been a pretty charismatic incumbent with a good personal story, but he has not been a sort of more mavericky incumbent. Arizona likes maverick senators. It likes senators that are a little bit weird and a little bit quirky. And Blake Masters is certainly a little bit on the quirky side. However, he just has not been able to catch fire the same way that some of these other candidates. If he ends up being pulled across the finish line, ironically enough, it will be probably because of the strong campaign that Kerry Lake is running. And that is not what anybody anticipated after the primary. So Masters has a chance at the upset here, but Kelly has a slight but significant advantage. So we're still listing this one conservatively here in the leans Democrat category. And then finally, the last lean D seat is Georgia. Now this one bears some explanation. And this was my toughest call of getting rid of toss-ups. Because this seat actually is a toss-up. This seat I could see going either way. But here's why I would give a very, very slight advantage to Warnock. I expect two things are going to happen on election night. Number one, Herschel Walker will not get over 50%, meaning in Georgia it triggers a runoff. And number two, Republicans will take the Senate. And if you look at the projections I have, Herschel Walker is not the 51st seat for Republicans in the Senate, okay? That being the case, in a runoff, we know that Warnock has a strong get-out-the-vote operation through the black churches in the state and souls to polls and so on and so forth. And Republicans might be less enthusiastic about coming out for Walker if Senate control does not depend on him. Now, there are a couple of ways in which this situation could break differently. Number one, if you look at the polling, Brian Kemp is outpolling Walker by something like 8 to 9 points. If those Kemp voters come home to Walker and Walker gets above 50%, that's very possible. And if Walker gets above 50%, of course he wins. The other possibility is you get Trump, you get McConnell, you get Kemp, you get everybody coming out and really pushing hard for Walker in the runoff, and Republicans win the runoff. That is certainly possible. I think the most likely scenario is that runoff, and I think in that runoff, Warnock has a slight advantage just because I don't think Senate control is going to depend on that seat. That being said, I wouldn't be totally shocked if this one goes the opposite direction, if Walker gets above 50%, or if Walker wins the runoff. This is a lean, but it's a very mild lean, but we're not doing toss-ups. I had to call my shot, and if I had to call this one, I'm calling this one as a lean Republican or lean Democrat seat as of right now. Now we'll move on to the lean Republican seats, and this begins with Pennsylvania. I think that John Fetterman is at a disadvantage, even though the polls still show him slightly ahead, because I can much more easily see a pathway to Shapiro voters pulling the lever for Oz, because Oz has a profile, is actually sort of a moderate candidate, and has been doing a lot of outreach to non-traditional Republican voters. And I do expect the Republican base to come home to Oz and vote for him when all is said and done. So I think Oz is going to win. I think Fetterman also, leave aside the issue of Fetterman's health for a second, and we'll come back to that in a second, but leave aside that. His primary issue, the primary thing he's worked on as lieutenant governor, is his role on the parole board and decarceration. I mean, that's his hobby horse. So you're the decarceration candidate in a time when crime in Philadelphia is out of control, absolutely out of control. I do not see the Democratic machine in Philadelphia coming out for Fetterman. And I just don't see a lot of the suburban voters who are split ticket voters coming out and voting for Oz. I think Oz is going to get the Pat Toomey 2016 coalition, where he underperformed Trump in some of the rural areas, but he overperformed Trump in the five counties of Philadelphia. He got some of those suburban voters that were Romney Clinton voters, and they came back to him. And I think Oz is very well positioned to do that. So I anticipate Oz coming out just slightly ahead here. This might be one of the closest races on election night, but I think that Oz is going to pull this one out. All right. So that's Pennsylvania. Next on the list is Nevada. Republicans have a durable polling advantage in Nevada. Adam Laxalt has actually been leading in most of the polls, and he's leading against an incumbent. Now, I want to caveat this, and then I want to do the most academic thing ever and caveat my caveat. So the caveat is Nevada is one of the few states that has, in many elections in the past, had a slight bias toward Republicans in polling. In other words, it's one of the few states where Republican strength is sometimes overstated. Here's the caveat to that. The reason this is often the case is because the Democratic base is heavily dependent on Hispanic Latino voters in Nevada, and they are notoriously difficult to poll. So the one election when this was not true, when actually polls overestimated Democrats just a tick in Nevada, was 2020, okay? So if, in fact, the Hispanic movement toward the GOP that we've been seeing since 2020 in places like the Rio Grande Valley, in Florida, and to a certain extent all across the country, is manifesting itself in Nevada, there's actually a possibility the polls are underestimating Republicans. All of that being said, Laxalt has run a very strong campaign. And Cortez Masto is a completely anonymous backbencher in an environment that is very good for Republicans. I think Adam Laxalt wins this. I think Nevada is the 51st seat and is the seat that hands Republicans control of the chamber. And so that is the next race on my sort of leans Republican category. Now we're starting to get into some races that are on the borderline of sort of leans and likely. And I'm going to nudge into likely Republican after this next one. And that, the next one is North Carolina. Ted Budd versus Sheree Beasley. Beasley doesn't have some of the same challenges that some of her Democratic compatriots further down this list have had. And also, North Carolina is a light red but somewhat swingy state. And Budd is, well, I would say he's not a bad nominee. He's a little bit more conservative than your typical sort of establishment North Carolina Republican. That being said, he's now leading consistently by 4 to 6 points in the polls. And I think that's enough that this should stay comfortably in Republican hands. It's right on the borderline of leans to likely. We're being conservative here, small c, so I'm going to keep it in the likely category for now. Or sorry, in the lean category. Moving to likely, Ohio. Ohio is just a red state. It's a red state, pure and simple. Mike DeWine is so far ahead in the polls that Ohio's not even on the list of gubernatorial races that I'm ranking in that episode. He's going to crush. Vance has regained his footing, has had some very good debates against Tim Ryan recently. Tim Ryan has been running an extremely disingenuous campaign where he's been portraying himself as almost a conservative Republican. I've had people who I've talked to that are working elections in Ohio who've asked me, you know, I'm getting people that are asking, is Tim Ryan a Democrat or is he a Republican? Right. That is how much he's been running away from the Democrats. That's not going to work forever. And so I think voters are going to come home here, and I'm putting Ohio in the likely Republican category at this point, because it's just the pathway for Democrats actually winning this one is really closing down. Next, we have Wisconsin. Okay. Wisconsin is really getting away from Democrats. Mandela Barnes has kind of the same problem as Fetterman. As lieutenant governor, he's been focusing on, you know, defund the police type issues and rhetoric, has had some progressive positions that are strong medicine for a swing state like Wisconsin. Ron Johnson always overperforms his polling. And the polling is showing him up by about 6 points. But like the last two times Ron Johnson ran for re-election, the race looked close and he overperformed it by 3 to 4 points. So if we're seeing that again, we should expect Ron Johnson to win and win comfortably. Last and certainly not least, there is Utah. Utah is actually safe, I would say, fairly safe. But there has been enough polling that shows Evan McMullen, the independent candidate who's a de facto Democrat, in somewhat striking distance of Mike Lee, that this one might pop onto the board as a likely. There's a slight chance of an upset here, but it's not going to happen. I think Mike Lee is all but certain to win this. And again, polling in Utah is scanty. It is notoriously challenging. And I think that Mike Lee is probably more likely to overperform his polling currently than he is to lose the race. So that's what we're looking at in the Senate. I am projecting here a net gain of Republican plus one, which gives the Republicans 251 seats in the Senate. That being said, would it totally shock me if Republicans win Arizona? No. Would it totally shock me if Republicans win Georgia? Not at all. Like I said, I think that's as close to a pure toss-up race as we see right now. And Herschel Walker, I think, has some momentum actually in that race. So the fundamentals of that could change. So this prediction as of right now. And it wouldn't shock me if New Hampshire or Colorado, we wake up on Wednesday morning after the election and we realize that there's been an upset in one of those races. So I'm projecting somewhere between 51 and 54, but I am projecting Republicans to take the Senate. I'm projecting them to hold all their current seats and pick up at least one and possibly as many as, let's say, let's be generous and say four seats in the Senate. Now, if you're a Democrat, here's what's really terrifying about this. Looking ahead to 2024, briefly, and then we'll close our discussion of the Senate. At most, Republicans have three seats up that could be contested. Florida with Rick Scott, Indiana, Mike Braun, I expect to run for governor. There's a lot of chatter about that. And Texas, Ted Cruz has a tendency to underperform just a little bit, what you'd expect from a Republican in Texas. And, you know, I don't know if he is planning on sticking it out in the Senate for another term, so it could potentially be an open seat. Those are the only three chances you have if you're a Democrat. Republicans have 11 potential targets, ranging from reach seats like Minnesota with Amy Klobuchar to West Virginia and Montana, which should fall over in a strong breeze. Republicans will be on the offense in the Senate in 2024. And the presidential election looks like it could be an absolute disaster at the top of the ticket for Democrats. So the election results in 2022 for Democrats might be a high watermark for them in the Senate for a little while. So That is just something to keep our eyes on. But I am projecting Republicans to flip the chamber. And so we will have to see on election night if I'm right. And you can come and see us on the live stream on election night and mock me for not calling enough races to flip to the Republicans if, in fact, we get the tsunami that we could get on American One. And so please do check us out. Thank you once again for watching this podcast, for listening to this podcast, and for Blind Politics. This is Dr. Nolte signing off.